We're back at the Radio Cafe, and I'm Hollis Walker, sitting in for Mary Charlotte. My next guests are Lois Rudnick, a cultural historian and who happens to be a member of the board of KSFR, and Miles Conway, the communications director of AFSCME. Aren't you impressed how quickly I said that? Okay,
perfect.
I even know what that acronym stands for, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees.
That's us, yeah.
Yay, I got it right. We're going to be talking about salt of the earth. Mm-hmm. Gosh, who wants to tell the audience, people who don't know about this fabulous film, what it is? You want to start?
Sure, I'll start, Lois? Okay. Yes. Salt of the Earth was a docudrama, as we would call it today, that was made in 1954, and it has one of the most extraordinary histories of, I would say, any film in U.S. docudrama history, and it's, from my point of view, the most significant film ever produced in New Mexico. It's a film that is by, about, and for predominantly Mexican-American laborers in Grant County who were in the midst of a strike against Kennecott Copper Company, Local 890 Mine Mill, is the short name of it. And there were a group of Hollywood producers who had been blacklisted during the McCarthy era, formed an independent film company called IPC. The key players were Michael Wilson, who was the screenwriter, who was probably better known for having written The Bridge Over the River Kwai, Planet of the Apes, and Lawrence of Arabia. Herbert Biberman, who was the director, and Paul Jericho, who was the producer. They were looking to make a movie about working people, and they came to Grant County in the middle of the strike. And they were so taken by the extraordinary courage of the men and women who were leading this strike for better wages, for fairer wages, for wages that were not discriminatory between Anglo workers and Mexican American workers, for better health care, for better fringe benefits, for safety in the mine. They decided to focus on this union and this strike, which had begun in the fall of 1950, for the movie. And the movie is a first in many respects. There were 400 brothers and sisters of the union who worked with the filmmakers and screenwriters critiquing the script.
Can you imagine?
No.
What a job by committee. 400 people reading it. It's a nightmare.
It's absolutely incredible. They changed some of the script if they felt that they were portrayals of Mexican Americans as stereotypical portrayals. They gave their feedback. They were listened to. One of the reasons this was possible is that the leadership of the union, a man by the name of Jenks, had come in 47 to begin to work with this union. During World War II, right after World War II, when finally labor unions could, actually since 1935, strike and be protected by federal law because of the Wagner Labor Relations Act. He helped to train the workers, but before he did that, he learned Spanish fluently, he and his wife, Clint and Virginia Jenks. They learned Mexican-American history, highly unusual for Anglos. They came from Colorado. He was a member of the Communist Party, as were many of the leaders in the film crew are affiliated with the Communist Party. And one of the things that the Communist Party had as one of its major ethos was to work on ending racial and ethnic discrimination and providing equality for women.
So let's stop there.
Yes.
The history of this film is so fascinating.
It is.
We can go on and on and on. Miles, this is the 60th anniversary of this film.
Yep, the release of the film, March 15th, 1954, it was completed. So this year there's been a series of events that have kind of commemorated the release of that film and the important history that it carries with it. We'll be showing the film again on May 1st, on May Day. It's actually going to be the premiere film of the Santa Fe Film Festival at John Cocteau Theater. And there'll be a little bit of events around it, you know, where some of the personalities that have been involved with the event will be up here talking about the importance of the history, you know, what it meant for the women's movement, what it meant for the labor movement.
Right. You know, the a lot of the discussion about this movie often, and rightly so, focuses on it as a film about Union history. But when you watch this film, as an individual, when I sat down to watch this film in its entirety for the first time, I went, wait a minute, this is a feminist film.
Yes, it is.
It is.
Yeah, so can you talk a little bit about that? How does that work out?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, what the women's movement, you know, always needs is a man to talk about it.
It's okay, I'll correct you if you're wrong, Mats.
Okay. I think the film is fascinating in that right. I mean, when the women, that's what's so remarkable about this film.
Yeah, explain how the women play a role.
Sure. The film and the true-to-God history of what happened was that the men were prevented from being on the strike line after about a year because the company, Empire Zinc, got an injunction kicking them off the strike line. And what happened at the time was the women, the wives, the sisters, the children, formed what's called the Women's Auxiliary of the union and said, hey, this injunction says only the men cannot be on the strike line.
The workers, right.
We can take over the strike line. That vote in itself was an incredible moment in all history where, you know, most men voted against it. But then the women said, hey, this is a community meeting. We want to vote too. The resolution passed, or the motion passed. The women took over the strike line and held it for, you know, another year while they continued to negotiate to get, the equal pay. The women brought sanitation into the argument and made that a union demand. We want running water in our house.
That,
we want
hot water.
That
was a great
water.
Part right. of the movie,
it
was the women saying.
A true
saying,
part of the struggle.
Right, yeah.
So that was very remarkable. 1951. So at a time when a lot of that stuff was not on the nation's radar, this was going on in Grant County, New Mexico. And so they did. They prevailed. They won. Women were run over on the picket line. They were tear gassed. They were arrested with their children and put in jails. It's a very painful memory. A lot of the surviving women from Grant County, you know, tell those stories to us. And for them, one woman who was actually hit by a car during the strike, who's still alive, Rachel Valencia, a lifelong activist. You know, she hadn't seen the movie yet. In 60 years, it was too painful for her to remember.
Too painful to look at.
But she did see it just this last March when we screened it as part of the 60th anniversary in Grant County.
One of the extraordinary things, it's really a first in American film history about this movie, is the way in which the screenwriters align wage slavery with domestic slavery. When the women take over the picket line, there are political discussions at the clothesline. I think it's the first time in American history a clothesline has been a site for political discussion. And the men are hanging out sheets and towels and diapers and talking about what a drag it is to be home with the kids and have to do housework. And these are the men who would say to their wives, what do you do all day while we're sweating?
Right.
You know, and doing agonizing and dangerous labor in the mines. It really is a moment of absolute wonder in a decade when Debbie Reynolds, you know, the kind
Doris
of women
Day,
stars,
right.
Peach Blanket Bingo, Debbie Reynolds,
and part
Marilyn
of
Monroe.
Artistic license that the movie took. Some of the elders, some of the ladies that are still with us said, you know that part about the men taking care of the children and hanging the laundry? It never happened.
I'm glad they took artistic license with that.
I'm sure they gave it a go.
Let's talk about the release of the film and what happened. You mentioned a moment ago that the producers, the writers, the people who put this film together had all been blacklisted in Hollywood. Let's talk about what happened when they started, actually, after they shot the film, what happened?
What happened is that they were turned down by almost every union. They needed to do to do the production work, the processing work, and the distribution work. And they ended up having to do a lot of this work in secret. The film would have been ready in 4 months, But because there were already people alerted in the United States Congress about the film, there were articles in the Hollywood Reporter that a red film was being made in a county next to Los Alamos. Of course, nobody knew the geography of New Mexico.
Only a couple hundred miles away.
Exactly. And that this was going to dangerously feed into the spy rings that were purportedly all over the place giving away atomic secrets in the United States. So the film became a cause celebre. They ended up doing processing in a ladies' room in a theater in southern Pasadena. They ended up not telling the musicians and composers of the music what film they were actually writing for. And by guess and by gosh, even having to use amateur splicers, they put together a film that finally in a year was able to be released. And at the time that they wanted to release it, most distributors decided they couldn't show it. There were threats in cities where it was supposed to be shown that the theaters would be stink bombed if they showed the film. So it was shown in a few theaters in Northern California, one in L.A., one in Silver City.
Thank God for Northern California.
And the film essentially died until 1965, when it was resurrected during the Chicano rights, civil rights, women's rights movement, and began to get a whole new life and has been vitally alive ever since as a film that is internationally renowned. Now, the film did have legs in China. It was the only American film allowed to be shown in China for 15 years.
Wow.
It won awards in Czechoslovakia and in Paris.
Let
it was
stop
shown
you
throughout.
There. Yeah. I just want to say that I'm talking with Lois Rudnick, a cultural historian, and Miles Conway, communications director of the AFSCME Union. And we're talking about Salt of the Earth, a 1954 movie, probably the most famous movie ever made in New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, you're picking us up where we were talking about what happened after the film was done and how it came back in the 60s. Why, Miles, why is it still important today?
Well, that's a great question. It is important today because labor continues to fight these, to have these struggles. I mean, 1950, you know, the end of 52, when the strike, the Empire's Ink strike, was won, and the Chicano miners, you know, got their they got their equal pay. They eliminated what was called the Mexican wage. And the women, of course, their families got running water in their homes and stuff like that. I mean, they had to keep fighting to protect these rights. You know, there were many, many more strikes in the Grand Canyon area through the 60s, through the 70s, when other companies came in and took over those mines. Because just because you have an agency like OSHA, which is wonderful, and the labor movement gave rise to that, the worker in the workplace still has to know their rights. They still have to recognize that they're in a situation where, hey, this isn't safe. I shouldn't be doing this. And the only reason they're going to know that is if they are aware of their rights. And, of course, the labor struggle is the mechanism that allows that knowledge to be passed on from worker to worker, from generation to generation. I think that in our country, every social issue, you know, has been advanced through labor struggle, whether it's voting rights, I mean, I'm looking across the room here at a police officer who is a woman, a Santa Fe police officer. You know, I mean, at some time or another, labor has fought for that right, for equality among the genders, among race, among orientation, you name it. And so I think that it's relevant today, the movie is relevant today, because we continue to have these struggles. You know, in here in Santa Fe, we have a living wage. You know, labor certainly came down on the side of the living wage for Santa Fe, you know, extending to Santa Fe County. Las Cruces is now considering raising its wage to $10.10, and we'll always be a part of that struggle. We'll always be a part of that fight to empower working people, maintain our middle class.
I think sometimes also it's important to be reminded of the roots of labor struggle at the very basic level. Watching this movie about the miners reminds us that, you know, these people were sent down into a hole in the earth alone. One of the issues that comes up in the movie is that the Mexican-American workers were sent into the mine alone to work, whereas the Anglo workers never went into the mine without two people. They had a buddy system mm-hmm. for safety's sake. And, you know, we who live in, you know, white-collar world or, you know, we don't have a lot of industry or manufacturing here where, you know, safety issues are a daily concern that's in our face, in other words. And I think it's a good reminder that these things continue to be important.
I think it's important. You've got to bring it forward. I mean, we have this wonderful time between us and Salt of the Earth, and we have this wonderful movie that reminds us of the history. But in 2006, 65 Mexican miners, I mean, just over the border mm-hmm. in Coahuila, lost their lives because mm-hmm. the mine, it didn't have proper ventilation. It didn't have the proper safety situation going on. Grupo Mexico, ASARCO, who owns mines in this country, the miners were scheduled to go on strike the next week, the very next week. And then afternoon, there was a terrible methane explosion. Mm. 65 miners, most of them are still there. The mine corporation didn't even dig them out, didn't even go and recover the bodies. And so it's just a very visceral reminder that this struggle can never end. We always have to be vigilant, safety at work. Yeah.
Do you think that that's the nature of capitalism, that that we will always have this tension and you know, between union and ownership?
We got to have the tension. Mm-hmm. The tension is what makes it work. Mm-hmm. If when there's no tension, then one side or the other has completely won, and we don't want to see what that looks like. Mm-hmm. I think we have models across the mm-hmm. world where, you know, unbridled capitalism right. has reigned.
Yes.
And you see, you know, buildings falling down mm-hmm. with hundreds of workers in them because they had no safety regulation.
So, for example, here the issue that often comes up in Santa Fe is the nurses' union mm-hmm. at Chrystus St. Vincent Hospital and the hospital. Although that is not technically a capitalistic issue because the hospital is nonprofit, nonetheless, it is a worker situation versus, you know, the management, and that the nurses keep management. There's something about the balance there that right. keeps things, you know, in a better place.
One of the reasons why we have to remember this movie and this strike is that what labor union activists and unions were able to win after World War II in the 50s and 60s in the way of decent wages and fringe benefits, retirement, pensions. And the 890 union was even able to win scholarships for their children to college if mm-hmm. they lived in the county. Mm-hmm. They moved from the working class into the middle class. There never would have been a majoritarian middle class in this country by the middle of the 1960s if it were not for labor unions. Mm-hmm. And this film reminds us of that in a time period when unions have much less power than they had through the middle of the 1970s. But the other thing it reminds us, for those who might feel, what could we do in a world of predatory capitalism? It isn't capitalism per se, it's predatory capitalism.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is that this film reminds us that under the most adverse circumstances imaginable, Mexican Americans who were segregated in every single facet of life, just in southern New Mexico, as African Americans were in the South, segregated pools, housing, schools, water fountains, even the time clock was segregated in the mill, mm-hmm. that these people rose up as an act of deliberate resistance to work with filmmakers who were blacklisted because they were communists right. to make a film about the agency and dignity and morality of Mexican American people in a country where they weren't acknowledged as even American at this time, shows what the human spirit can do.
Yes. The risks they took and the suffering they endured throughout the strike. You know,
yep.
we forget that, you know, there wasn't a wagon there giving them food every
right.
day. They did have support from other union people around the country. But I want to come back to the consequences for many of the people who were involved in the film, especially for the lead female
yes,
role, Rosara Revuelta.
Yes, she
Talk
was.
Talk about what happened to her.
She was deported back to Mexico as a dangerous alien before the film was finished. And so some of the scenes had to be filmed in Mexico. There are a couple of glitches in the movie where you can kind of see it doesn't flow perfectly, and that has something to do with the people who were working on processing it, but it also has to do with the fact that she wasn't in Grant County for the final scenes of the film. Her career was ruined. She was blacklisted. She never made a movie again in Mexico or the U.S., and she was never allowed back into the United States. And she said, she wrote about this experience. She said when she was growing up, her dad was a miner, and she could never understand how the people who produced the wealth on which the rich lived could earn such poor wages.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the fact that she, you know, she paid such a huge price.
Absolutely.
For making that movie.
And never said she never regretted it, doing it.
Right. It made a huge difference. And yeah. there haven't been that many good movies about workers and unions.
Right.
I mean, I was casting my mind back over my short film history in my head, which isn't so great. And all I could think of was Norma Rae.
It's Norma Rae is what everybody
and,
is the
and
first
sort
film.
Of Silkwood. Sort
yes.
of Silkwood. You
yes.
know, with Cher, wasn't it? You know.
Well, we just had Cesar Chavez. So
yes. I can't wait to see.
Yeah. And I think it's a great opportunity. It's to a lot of people are saying, "Oh, the movie doesn't go deep enough into who Cesar was and how brilliant he was, what a strategist." And to them, you know, I just say, "You know what? But look what this is. It's a movie of one of our American heroes, mm-hmm. not just a Mexican American hero or a Chicano hero mm-hmm. or a labor hero, but he really raised the level of human dignity in our country." For the
did.
People that are producing our food, and so that's in there, and we hope that we'd like to see a remake of Salt of the Earth. Wouldn't that be neat? It's a
Wouldn't
great.
There will be.
Ooh, who could play? Who
well,
could play
there will
the,
be.
The
there has
roles.
Been.
There has been.
Yes, it's been an opera, Esperanza, that was created
yes. uh-huh.
in conjunction by the Wisconsin Labor Society uh-huh. in conjunction with the AFL-CIO. And the music department at the University of Wisconsin that was performed in 2000 and won a Governor's Humanities Award before the present governor.
Uh-huh.
And you can listen to it online. I'm trying to get a copy of it. And one of the teachers I'm working with at Capital High School, Meredith Tilp, who has put together a week-long curriculum on the McCarthy era and
you
labor
show
strikes.
Film. You show this
tomorrow
film
I'll be showing it to 90 students from Capitol High and teachers
Fabulous.
From five departments as well as students from the School for the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And following week I'll be showing it to Montesol high school students.
Mm-hmm.
She and her students will be working with the theater department at Capitol High School next year to create a musical out of Salt of the Earth. So the
wow.
I think that its cultural resonance and its power as a story of empowerment of minorities and women is having a renaissance.
Yeah, and you can see this film online, actually.
Yes.
The full-length feature, the original film of Salt of the Earth, is on YouTube.
Yep.
So you can watch it for free. You can also watch it on Google. It costs money. But
it does. And the DVD, if you're really into the movie, the DVD has all kinds of historical background. It has interviews with the principal actors. It has wonderful extra material if you buy the DVD.
Or if you get a Netflix copy. Maybe it has the bonus features.
Yes, the bonus features, exactly.
You know, I'll go get a copy of it and watch it
you
so I can see the bonus features.
The special edition.
Yes,
the special edition.
Right.
Special edition
and
has
we didn't say this explicitly. Most of our listeners probably know this, but it's a black and white movie.
Yes.
And there is something about those black and white movies that carries a level of drama.
Yes.
That somehow in color, I don't know, you know, it wouldn't be the same.
Especially if you're highlighting good and evil.
Right.
And the good guys are the people of color and the bad guys are the white guys. So it works sort of very powerfully
right.
that way, it seems to me.
Well, but we should say that in that dispute, some of the Anglo workers
yes,
were aligned.
Absolutely.
With
and Jenks was a white guy.
Right.
He earned the nickname El Palomino from the Chicano workers
uh-huh.
because of his huge shock of white hair. And
white
of course, the workers play themselves in the movie. I'm not
yes.
sure I said that. So all of them, with a couple of exceptions, are the actual workers who were part of the strike.
Right,
and
the lead actors were professionals.
Juan Chacon was the actor who plays Ramon, who uh-huh. is the lead actor,
uh-huh.
was not a professional.
Oh.
He was one of the leaders of the union.
Uh-huh.
Esperanza, the woman who
the
plays
wife.
Esperanza, is the Mexican.
Rosario
Revueltas, yes, uh-huh. is a professional actor.
Uh-huh.
So that is absolutely true. There are union members who the management tries to woo away by offering them better positions as foremen. And, you know, why do you want to be with those tamale eaters? They use every
right.
kind of slur in the book. And uh-huh. one of the white guys says, "I like tamales."
Yeah, it's a nice movie in that sense because it's not all black and white. You know, the white guys aren't the bad guys and the Mexican Americans are the good guys.
Right.
It's more, very much more realistic.
Right, and the Judas, there is a Judas who's a Mexican American
right.
who becomes a rat
yes.
for the company and uh-huh. who tries to turn his fellow strikers in and... So you're right. It's not just black and white. It's more complex than that. And there are African Americans who were hired onto this film who could not get a job in Hollywood, and you will see them in the film very briefly.
Wow.
So it was, and you see people from all over the country sending in money to so that they could have money to feed the workers while they were on strike.
Mm-hmm.
Women came from all over Grant County to help the women on the line. It wasn't just the women from that particular who are married into those particular mine workers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was an extraordinary inter-ethnic, inter-racial, gender collaboration.
It's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, and I just can't recommend it enough.
Thank you.
It's a wonderful film to watch. And please, again, say the name of the amazing teacher.
Meredith Tilp. She teaches social studies and government at Capital High School. She is extraordinary.
And she's put together this curriculum that includes this.
Yes.
Uh-huh, includes the film.
And is bringing 90 folks from the high school to see this at CCA tomorrow.
We wanted to have Meredith on, but she's teaching.
Yes.
So she couldn't be here with us. Yeah. I really appreciate all of your input today about Salt of the Earth. Again, you can watch Salt of the Earth on YouTube for free. Learn a little bit of New Mexican history, the most famous movie ever made in New Mexico. Thanks for being with me, Lois and Miles.